the Chicago Theater of the Air. By Marion Clare, conducted by Henry Weber, written and directed by Jack LaFondre, Mutual presents radio's greatest hour of music and drama, the famous Chicago Theater of the Air. Tonight's performance, the grand opera of romance by Massenet, Manon, starring Virginia Haskins, David Poleri, Donald Grimm, and Bruce Wood, supported by dramatic players Everett Clark and Maurice D. Copeland. Ladies and gentlemen, the first few minutes of the Chicago Theater of the Air each week are dedicated to the history and principles of the United States of America, as reaffirmed by Colonel Robert R. McCormick, noted historian, outspoken American patriot, and distinguished editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune. For the past 10 years on the Chicago Theater of the Air, Colonel McCormick has, week in and week out, spoken up for freedom. A series of his inspiring talks came to the attention of the Awards Committee of the Freedoms Foundation of Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And from this significant series, his speech, Defining Democracy, was selected by the committee as a gold medal winner. Colonel McCormick was unable to attend the awards ceremony at Valley Forge. And last week on this program, we presented a transcription of the Valley Forge presentation, and Colonel McCormick repeated his Defining Democracy speech. Since that broadcast, we have had so many inquiries about the work of the Freedoms Foundation and so much response to the award-winning speech that the Foundation has sent a special representative to Chicago to tell us something about this great Valley Forge enterprise, and through Justice Joseph E. Daley of the Illinois Supreme Court, to present the medal to Colonel McCormick in behalf of the Foundation. That special representative is William W. Higgins, Associate Director of the Freedoms Foundation. And it is with great pleasure that we present him at this time. Mr. Higgins.
Ladies and gentlemen, a large group of some of the most distinguished and sincere Americans in our nation has this year set up headquarters on a revolutionary farm at the site of Washington's great triumph at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. At this historic shrine of freedom, these distinguished Americans have formed the Freedoms Foundation and are contributing their own time and money in furtherance of our American way of life. The foundation is non-political, non-commercial, non-sectarian, and non-profit. Its fundamental belief is in a constitutional government designed to serve the people. Its purpose is to build and create a better understanding of the spirit and philosophy of the Constitution and Bill of Rights and our indivisible political and economic freedoms inherent in the American way of life. Its purpose is to inspire love of freedom and to support the spiritual unity born from the belief that man is a dignified human being, created in the image of his maker, and by that fact, possessor of certain inalienable rights, and by that virtue, master rather than servant of his society. The responsibility of liberty and freedom is every American's responsibility and obligation. Its purpose is to inform and enlighten the American people to a better understanding of their individual responsibilities in this republic, to inspire the American people in the spirit and philosophy of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The Freedoms Foundation each year presents awards for outstanding achievement to deserving citizens, regardless of station in life and irrespective of color, creed, political or religious ideals or beliefs, and disregarding professional activities. An award winner may be a worker, a leader, a teacher, preacher, or a civil servant. Such an award winner is Colonel Robert R. McCormick, whose inspiring weekly messages over this network typify the very spirit of the Freedom's Foundation, which spirit, in a sentence, is the courage, the encouragement, and stimulation of all Americans in all walks of life to speak up for freedom, each in his or her own way. To present this medal to Colonel McCormick, the Foundation has selected a man who knows him well and who is qualified through long association to set forth the principles of Americanism for which Colonel McCormick has stood resolute, regardless of criticism and attack, and through bad times and good. Speaking in behalf of the Freedom's Foundation, it is my pleasure and my privilege to present the Honorable Joseph E. Daley, Distinguished Justice of the Supreme Court, State of Illinois, Justice Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Ladies and gentlemen, the large gold medal which I am about to present to Colonel McCormick carries the figure of George Washington kneeling in prayer at Valley Forge. In this humble figure of our country's father, we see the spirit of many things. We see the right to worship God in one's own way. We see the right to free speech and to a free press. We see the right to assemble. We see the right to petition for grievances. We see the right to privacy in our own homes. We see the right of habeas corpus, the prohibition of excessive bail. We see the right to trial by jury and the assumption that a man is innocent until proved guilty. We see the right to move about freely at home and abroad. We see the right to own private property. We see the right to work in callings and localities of our own choice. We see the right to bargain with our employees. We see the right to go into business, compete, and make a profit. We see the right to bargain for goods and services in a free market. We see the right to contract about our affairs. We see the right to service of government as a protector and referee. We see the right to freedom from arbitrary government regulation and control. We see all these things and more. We see a tattered army that surmounted insurmountable obstacles and privations to win these rights and privileges, and we see a sacred obligation to carry on the great cause for which they sacrificed so much. Today, the cause is the same as Washington's cause, but the battle has taken on much larger proportions. The battle goes beyond the battlefield. It rages in office, street corner, farm, and home. It is a battle against all isms except Americanism. It is a battle against bureaucracies, power tactics, and the shadow of communism. It is a battle that must be waged by thought, by teachings, by deed. No man in these United States is more devoted to his country than Colonel Robert R. McCormick of the Chicago Tribune. In action and deed throughout his long career as a soldier and newspaper man, Colonel McCormick has been an inspired champion of the American way of life. Against all criticism, he has steadfastly held his ground and affirmed and reaffirmed the basic principles of our nation, which waves of hysteria have threatened to submerge. It is significant and gratifying to know that the very interests which leveled criticism at Colonel McCormick's firm American stand are now among his most ardent supporters. Colonel McCormick, in presenting you with this medal for outstanding achievement in the furtherance of the American way of life, I am giving you much more than a mere piece of metal. With it goes the heartfelt appreciation and admiration of all of us who believe in America, and the sincere hope that your heroic efforts in behalf of your country will pay dividends in human tolerance, understanding, and freedom for centuries to come.
Mr. Justice Daley and Mr. Higgins,
I accept this medal in the spirit in which it was given, the American spirit. Awards and medals, as you know, are only symbols. Whether such symbols are made of gold or silver or brass or lead is unimportant. The important thing is what they mean to their recipients. To me, this medal means that the spirit of our country is still alive. It means that many of our leading citizens working under the banner of the Freedom Foundation have pledged themselves to the task which once confronted Washington, Jefferson, Henry, and Lincoln. It means that those factions, both at home and abroad, which seek to usurp our basic human rights, are meeting the same determined resistance which has inspired our greatly outnumbered and out-equipped Continental Army to victory. However, there is one fundamental difference between our American Revolution and the fight we have on our hands today. At Bunker Hill, Yorktown, and Saratoga, we could see our enemies. We knew who we were fighting. Today, the enemies of our inalienable rights lurk behind official screens, often in high government positions. Such enemies fight with power and greed. Other enemies may be found standing on soapboxes or pitting a busy street corner. These enemies fight with ignorance. Only superior ammunition can put these enemies to rout. That ammunition is not the atom bomb, as effective as it may be in destroying life and property. It is not vast armies or navies or hordes of planes loaded for the kill. Such weapons have their purpose, which is the purpose of a club to keep off the military aggressor. But the most effective weapon with which to combat power, greed, and ignorance is the weapon of complete understanding. To completely understand the principles of our republic and to comprehend the means of free enterprise and the basic human rights which we as Americans enjoy is to possess the most powerful and effective weapon on earth. To this understanding of our Constitution and the government whose sole purpose is to serve the people, I pledge my unqualified support.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the presentation and acceptance of an award presented to Colonel Robert R. McCormick by the Freedoms Foundation for his inspiring speech, Defining Democracy. Now the curtain rises on tonight's Chicago Theater of the Air production of Manon by Massenet, starring Virginia Haskins, David Boleri, Donald Graham, and Bruce Foote, with narration by Marion Clare.
No longer am I mortal, for I live in the 18th century. I am a spirit now. But the story of my life is the story of young love, and as such, it cannot die. My story has been lived and relived. It cannot die. Thank you. stagecoach, soon to stop at a small inn at Amiens, France. I've never traveled alone before. Always I've been sheltered by my family. This is a very young maiden's first hour of freedom. Wonderful, wonderful freedom. But not for long. At the inn, I'm to meet my cousin, a royal guardsman, who will escort me to a convent. A convent. Is this to be the destiny of the beautiful dreams I dream? We've stopped at the courtyard of the inn. So many people. Which one is my cousin? How are we to recognize each other when we've never met before? Oh, I'm not really frightened. This is the glorious adventure my heart has yearned for. This is the great outside world I've waited so long to see. I've seen so much that I'm amazed. I've seen so much that I am dazed. Oh, it's so beautiful, it's so new. Guardsman has come out of the inn. Oh, tall and handsome in his uniform. He's coming toward me. Yes.
Your pardon, mademoiselle. You are Manon Lescaut.
Oui, monsieur. And you are... I almost hope he isn't my cousin, but I hope in vain.
Your devoted cousin, mademoiselle. What a pity that I must escort one so young and beautiful to the dark sanctuary of a convent.
Oh, yes, I agree. It is a pity.
Now that I must take care of you, there are some matters I should mention. I must meet some friends at the inn. There are some things that need attention. Just wait here for me. Don't go away. I won't be long. Be good, my child. Be quite gentle, or else they'll say that I'm to blame. I'm supposed to guard the family name. A reputation. A brazen lad makes improper advances. Just be careful and turn away. Don't answer any foolish questions. Tell him no, at least for a while. Don't even smile. Be good, my child. Be quite gentle, or else they'll say that I'm to blame. I'm supposed to guard the family name.
He has returned to the inn, but his words plague me. Family reputation. Why am I always warned of such things? Everywhere life and adventure and happiness are calling. Yet always I am forbidden to answer the voices I hear. Behind dark convent walls, must my dreams forever fade away?
Alas, my
with the beautiful ladies in the courtyard. Ladies with laughter on their lips and dressed in breathtaking splendor. Why should I be hidden from the world when my heart cries out for the happiness that is there? Wait, who comes toward me now? A stranger. I have been warned. I must not speak to strangers.
Mademoiselle, please. Do not look upon me as a stranger. I'm the Chevalier des Grieux. From the moment I saw you step from that coach, it seemed as though I'd known you forever.
Oh, young years, and how handsome. I know I should turn away, but he seems to have me under a spell.
Mademoiselle, I had intended to leave here on the very stagecoach that brought you to this courtyard. But now that my eyes have looked upon your beauty, I could no more leave you than I could move the moon from the heavens. Something draws you close to me. Some divine power that will not let you go.
Something makes me answer. Chevalier des Grieux, you too seem very close to me.
Will you tell me your name?
You may call me Mano.
Mano.
Together we have run away, my chevalier and I. Together we set out on love's glorious adventure. I live in Paris now, sharing a small apartment with my beloved chevalier. Sometimes I am lonely and long for the beautiful clothes and luxuries I see in the shops across from my window. But we'll not have to remain hidden much longer. At this very moment, my chevalier has gone to mail a letter to his father, the Count, telling of his love for me and asking permission to marry me. Soon there will be money to buy the things I long for, things that... Oh, someone's at the door. Is that you, chevalier? Happily, I open the door, expecting to see my beloved, but it is a stranger, a distinguished middle-aged gentleman, obviously of great wealth.
Mademoiselle Manon, my name is Bretigny. I happen to know that the Count de Grieux has learned of his son's affair with you and heartily disapproves.
My heart almost stops beating as he continues.
There will be no money, and the Count's guards will be here this evening to carry off your lover.
What can I do? What can I say? I am speechless.
Foolish maiden, you are too young to know real love. When you first stepped off that coach, I knew that your beauty is meant for jewels, luxurious gowns, and the gaiety of life at court. All the things I can give you.
I should not listen to this, Monsieur Bretigny, but the temptation is great.
Manon, if you truly love your chevalier, is it fair to make him an outcast from his family? Think of his suffering without money and without honor. Your love will soon turn to despair and hate, mademoiselle. Return your chevalier to his father. Let them carry him off tonight. Then come to me, my lovely.
I must be alone. I cannot give him my answer now. I must think. Monsieur Bretigny's words haunt me. The most expensively dressed and the most beautiful. Oh, and to think that but a few moments ago, my chevalier sat across from me at this very table and wrote his father of his love for me. Chevalier has come back. He has mailed the letter to his father. His words touch my heart.
How sweet is all when all fear is suspended, and we two are here all alone.
a dream that's not yet ended. When I close my eyes, I see below a plain little dwelling, that spark is telling, gleaming white beneath a tree.
I know who is at the door now. Soldiers. Soldiers to take my chevalier from me. He is gone. I have let them take him away. My temptation was too great to save him. I have forsaken my chevalier. Monsieur Bretigny is waiting. Monsieur Bretigny, and all of the wealth and pleasures of Paris. Me now, Manon Lescaut, beautiful prize of the wealthy Bretigny. Have you ever seen such priceless gems and such beautiful gowns? The weeks since Chevalier has taken from me have treated me well.
Beauty of her flitting hours of sleep from man.
Music and laughter, I think I am happy. But shadows come to haunt me when the music dies away. I have overheard Monsieur Bretigny say that the lover I've forsaken is heartbroken. The Chevalier has entered the seminary at Saint-Sulpice and is determined to take holy orders. His father, the Count, has gone to reason with him. My luxuries are beautiful, but my heart goes out to my Chevalier. Night when I'm alone, I see my Chevalier as if in a dream. I hear his father's words.
My son, your Manon is but a fickle toy of Bretigny. Come home and start your life anew, I pray you. Soon you'll find what true love means.
But my Chevalier will not leave the seminary.
Please, Father. From now on, my love is in the holy order.
But his father pleads in vain.
The high-sounding words. But, my son, how have you been living? What do you really know of life? That you wish to finish like this? I beg of you, take a wife, worthy of us, worthy of you. Take up the joys of family life, as I did, as you ought to do. For heaven has given us a new. Hidden from creation, I beg of you to
Now I know my dream is true. Word has reached me. The Count cannot move his son's determination. He leaves his son at the seminary. My Chevalier prays now for divine guidance.
From me.
The thought of my chevalier languishing behind dark seminary walls is too much. I must go to him. I manage to enter the gates. I am at his side. His voice pierces my heart.
Manon.
I look into his eyes. My chevalier, is this not the place for souls that have strayed? But his eyes will not meet mine.
You have forsaken me once. You will forsake me again.
Yet I know his heart hears my plea. found our love, my chevalier and I. But my chevalier cannot forget that once I lived for clothes and gems. The money left to him by his mother, he has lavished upon me, even though I swear his love is all I want now. If only I could prevent his gambling to replenish his fortune. We are at the gaming tables. Suddenly, my chevalier is accused of cheating. All eyes are upon me. I am to blame. I am his paramour. Now his father stands before us. He speaks to the accusers.
Gentlemen, I will stand behind my son and reimburse you for what losses you suffered. But as for this Manon, she has disgraced our family name for the last time. She will be deported from this country, never to return again.
You, Manon, I have heard of your scandals and how you treat my honored name.
My beauty has faded. Long weeks in the damp darkness of prison have destroyed the bloom of my youth. Today I am being deported to Le Havre. Now I know that life holds tragedy as well as happiness. I do not mind the marching. My feet are numb and my heart is numb. A hazy figure appears at my side and pulls me from the line of march. It is my chevalier. He has bribed the guard. For a moment, I see the sun.
Oh, I feel all a joy returning, like a ray of the sun that shone upon a happier day.
Oh, oh, oh my love, my love, my not for you, all out here caressing.
Oh, thank me in your arms.
Is it not my voice calling through my tears?
Oh, not speak of tears.
Remember how I love.
one glorious moment I dream again. In my dream, only love. No wealth or luxury greater than love. But it gets darker, darker. I cannot seem to reach the light. It is too far away. The dream has faded from my eyes, but my love still gleams brightly like a far-off star. I see it. I see it. My love goes with me to the grave.
Produced and narrated by Marion Clare, conducted by Henry Weber, written and directed by Jack McAndre, the Chicago Theater of the Air has presented the Grand Opera production Maman by Jules Massenet, starring Virginia Haskins in the title role, David Poleri as the Chevalier, Donald Graham as the father, and Bruce Foote as Les Gold. Featured speakers were William W. Higgins of the Freedoms Foundation, Illinois Supreme Court Justice Joseph E. Daley, and Colonel Robert R. McCormick, distinguished editor and publisher of the Chicago Tribune. Dramatic players were Everett Clark and Maurice D. Copeland. This is Lee Bennett cordially inviting you to next week's Chicago Theater of the Air production, the famous Christmas opera by Engelbert Humperdinck, Hansel and Gretel, starring Virginia Haskins, Ruth Slater, and Bruce Foote. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.